Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Power Athlete Radio listeners, we have another strong guest for you today, Sean Hayes. Sean is head of performance for the XFL. For those of you not familiar, The Rock threw his plush Kangol hat into the ring of professional sports when he revived the XFL as an alternate professional football league. Sean takes his job after spending 6 years as the director of strength conditioning for the WWE. During his tenure, he oversaw strength conditioning activities for the NXT organization in both the US and UK. Prior to the WWE, Sean spent 4 years with the Houston Texans, and before that, he worked for Penn State football. He has a bachelor's degree in economics from Harvard University, where he played linebacker for the Crimson Tide. Buckle up, Sean Hayes. You know, the XFL has had a tumultuous uprising and up and down. I mean, I remember when the XFL came out, I played with a dude whose name was He Hate Me.
Yeah.
And he was like one of the most famous guys. He actually was, I think he was on a practice squad at the Eagles. But
yeah, we all remember him.
Yeah, that's how we referred to him, as He Hate Me. And so it's had this deal, and then it crashed and it came back, and it...
Rod Smart.
Yeah, Rod Smart. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's it's interesting. And then I think it was like the amount of owners, and I think what is it, The Rock owns it now? Is it, it's his group?
Yep. Dwayne Johnson, Danny Garcia, and Redbird Capital. Those are our three-headed monster in ownership.
Nice. So how'd you get here?
Used to be owned by good question. Previously I was with the WWE for 6.5 years, which is ironic because the XFL's previous owner was my previous boss, Vince McMahon. So fortunate enough to work in a WWE for such a long time and be there with a tremendous experience and great company. And before that, I was just talking with Jacob before you got on about my time with the Houston Texans and how great that was. I guess my dream was always to play in the NFL. That never happened, but to be in there, you'd be on the sideline, a part of the organization, be with the guys in the mix. That was, I did that for two seasons, 2014, 2015. And then before that, I was with Penn State football. I was fortunate to be under leadership of Bill O'Brien as our head coach. He took over that program and just at a unique time in college football history where, back then in 2013, 2012, that was right when the Joe Paterno kind of saga was ending and kind of a weird time. And, but man, it was very cool to be a part of that because we helped stick that program together and keep that thing on track. And, that was unique and very, fulfilling to kind of, you know, look back and say, hey, that was what a cool time period that was, and to be a part of that. So yeah, before that I was at a smaller school in Jacksonville University, kind of just trying to cut my teeth, figuring out, you know, I wanted to be a linebackers coach. And then, yeah, ended up getting an opportunity to go to Penn State to be as a strength conditioning coach, and kind of never looked back, and been fortunate, kind of been lucky to hop on right people or be a part of the, guys on the rise like Bill O'Brien, and then, you know, met some people to go to the WWE and saying, you know, XFL now. So yeah, cool ride, fortunate. And it's been good. I think every stop I've learned stuff, learn things and experiences that help me with the next stop, which is good, you know.
How did the WWE prepare you for the XFL? I mean, that seems,
well, yeah, it's great. So yeah, you know, if you look at the WWE, I feel like, you know, if you can survive in that world, you can survive in anything. You know, that is a wild business. That's a nonstop deal. There's no off season. There's no, hey, we just finished up a long season. Now we're going to go back and we're going to take time off and get the body back. I mean, they just had SummerSlam last weekend and it's Monday Night Raw the next day, you know? So it's like that thing keeps going. So if you can survive an ad, and what I learned on that was how to take care of people's bodies and these athletes that are banged up and still get them through the week. You still got to train. How do we work around injuries and things like that? So the other thing is I was part of WWE developmental side. So these were pro athletes that still needed to develop and get to the main show, which was Monday Night Raw, which was Friday Night SmackDown. So I was in a unique spot where it was like college athletics and a little bit of pro mix. So it was like these guys were still hungry. These men and women wanted to make it to the top. And but they were treated like pros because they got paid to be there. So they, you know, it was a good mix of, you know what, they're still hungry, they're not entitled, right? Which is a unique thing. Usually you're in NFL, you got, you know, some entitled players and they're making millions of dollars, or you're in college athletics and they're hungry
and they're making millions of dollars.
Yeah, nowadays they are. But with NXT, with WWE, we were in that kind of a sweet spot. I felt really, you know, it was a real kind of a unique area where I loved that, you know, like, hey, it's your job to show up on time and get things done. You got to be like a pro, but hey, you still got to develop and work. And that's kind of what it's like in the XFL. So it's very similar in that regard. There are pro athletes. We got to take care of them, treat them like pros, show up on time, go about your business just like pros do. But hey, guess what? They're not entitled so much to the fact that they're making millions of dollars. There is something in their game that needs to be developed. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't be in the XFL. So it's like, hey, what can I do to get better to make it to that next step? So it's very similar parallels from previous stop to now. And, you know, so that's why it was enticing for me, because, you know, I love that, you know, it's like, you still got that chip on your shoulder, but at the same time, we're all pros here and we're going to show up on time and go to work.
Mm-hmm. Like, how does the XFL work? I mean, obviously the NFL is, you know, by far like the biggest on the planet, right, for this kind of Americanized football. So the XFL is kind of trying to sneak in, I guess you could say, like a off-season type of deal, kind of pulling from different players that get cut off of rosters and trying to kind of build guys and give guys another showcase to maybe potentially, I don't know, get bigger contracts. Like, really, what's the, you know, and I'm not asking for the marketing report, but I just wonder, like, how does the niche fit in? I mean, I've always thought that the NFL always, you know, everybody needs a rival, and the NFL has owned this kind of space for so long that it seems like everybody that's tried, from the USFL, XFL, all these other different things, have just kind of got in, they've got some momentum, and they just kind of peter out. And I wonder if it's you know, just a money thing, or it's just that the fans, because I liked watching the XFL. I liked some of the rules. I liked how they did the kickoff. I liked, you know, I mean, I just thought it was a fun version, whereas there's so much bullshit in the NFL down to like, your socks aren't tall enough, so now you get fined $5,000, or you're not wearing the right cleats. I mean, there was so much ticky-tack bullshit that the XFL is like, fuck that, just go out and play.
Yeah, you know, I think what the difference with this version of the XFL is that it's not really trying to be a rival. You know, I think they welcome the fact that we do want to have a collaboration with the NFL, and I think that's why it's so unique. The XFL wants to be a platform of greatness for players that might not have gotten the opportunity, right? It is an opportunity league. It is the league of opportunity. So it's very much based around that. It's a player first league. What can we do to help the player, as opposed to like, what can we do to help the league? We feel like if we focus on the player, then the league will get the league will get better, and that allows everybody to come back to center, right? If we all have different departments in this league, you know, strength conditioning is one department, but the entire league is focused on what's best for the player, then it brings us back to center and lets us know what our goal is and move forward and work as one. So like, that's really kind of the difference here with us. And the other thing I'd say is trying to how can we make the game better? How can we improve on the game that we all love, right? We're sitting here on this podcast because we share this love of the football. How can we improve it, right? It's been one way so for so long. Is there a way that we can tweak it, make rule changes, do things a little bit differently? We're not bound by those traditions that the NFL is bound by. We're not saying that that game is crap. We just say, hey, is there a way for us to make it better? Is there a way for us to improve it? And in that same breath, give this platform of opportunity for guys like, hey, might have fallen through the cracks. You know, look, hey, I still want to continue to be a pro football player. I'm on that 54. I'm always, you know, Dwayne Johnson says it all the time. He's player 54, right? It's a league of player 54s, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I was a 54. I was probably more like 64, but you know, I would have still loved to play in this league. So I think that's where the league is, you know, hangs its hat on of it being a league of opportunity and a league that wants to drive the future of the game into a better place, so that when we look back and say, man, we did some good things, not only for the players, but for the game of football. And, you know, hopefully, you know, that vision is what's going to keep it around, and as opposed to trying to compete with something that's, hey, let's be honest, that's going to be a hard task to do. That, you know, the NFL is there for a reason, and it's built in and lot of years and a lot of money. We don't really want to do that. We just want to kind of have our own universe, you know, and be that platform of opportunity for players.
The way I describe it is the NFL is like trying to displace the Catholic Church. I mean, it's been there forever. I mean, it's steeped in everywhere. I mean, people have fans. They have historical knowledge. Like my dad's fan. We lived here. We followed this. I mean, you know, playing in the NFL for a decade, I never would have expected like the family rivalries and the lineage, like, you know, the Eagles fans. Like I've been an Eagles fan for 40 years and, you know, my dad was an Eagles fan and this, and they have all this history building into it. So it's pretty amazing. With the XFL, how many teams are they planning to come out in this, you know, in the first go out coming? We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you a field or court sport athlete looking to dominate the leaderboard? Let me introduce you to Field Strong. Take your inner athlete to the next level by exposing yourself to the advanced training techniques that contributed to my 10 years in the NFL. Unlock pinnacle performance and level up your athletic potential today. Head to powerathletehq.com/fieldstrong and claim your 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
We have eight teams, right? So we have Arlington Renegades, Houston Roughnecks, Seattle Sea Dragons. We have the Vipers. We have the St. Louis Battlehawks. We have the DC Defenders, and then we have the Orlando Guardians. So those are our eight teams. We got a great staff of coaches that lead our teams. We got everybody from Hines Ward, Terrell Buckley, Wade Phillips, Bob Stoops, Anthony Beck. We just got a brand new coach, Anthony Blevins. Like, these guys have the pedigree to match, you know, to go along with anybody in this sport. And that's what really, so we feel like, man, this is, you know, and then on top of that, you know, you take it a step further. You talk about who's running the show from up top. It's people like, you know, Mark Ross, Doug Whaley, Kerry Gordon, Dave Dykeman. There's people with a lot of NFL experience that are really good at what they do. You know, our chief official, Dean Blandino, you know, a lot of years in the NFL. So, like, these people know what they're doing as far as in the game of football, whether it's the head coach, whether it's the, you know, the executives. So these very, very, like, football, not very knowledgeable in this game and business savvy. And we're, the league is in very good hands with the people that are in this league.
So where does your spot fit in? I mean, kind of the, this kind of performance deal where they bring in, I mean, is it something where every team, you know, do they have training facilities? Are these teams kind of like, you know, obviously, you know, does Seattle kind of bring these guys together? Do they have a centralized training plan, a strength coach that's kind of overseeing? You can just kind of, you know, overseeing everything.
I'm kind of overseeing everything here, as opposed to, you know, in maybe, you know, what you've been with, when you're experienced in the NFL and my previous with the, you know, Texans, it's, you know, we're kind of one organization and we're going against these other 31 organizations and the XFL, it's, hey, how do we make the league better? Right. How do we drive forward and do what's best for the players in this league, as opposed to just like team by team? Like, okay, yes, we all want to win. Like, and each team wants to win that championship at the end. But from our sense, it's different because we have one centralized ownership group, and then it all trickles down. And then, like I said earlier, we're all doing this for what's best for the player. So when in my vertical, strength conditioning, player performance, we like to call it, is you know, what can we do to make that's best for the player? We want to maximize their performance as best as we can, and we want to keep them available for these coaches to have on Saturdays and Sundays when they play. And then how do we do that? How do we make those effects trickle down throughout the whole league, all eight teams? How can all eight teams feel that and receive that care and programming, or, you know, things of that nature? So then that's where you hire coaches that, yes, they're going to be a part of those teams, but it's like, hey, this is our mission. This is what we want to do. This is how we want to take care of the players. You know, this is what we're going to do. This is our attack on that. And then, you know, you do that in a way where it's like, you know, you don't tell them how to do their job. It's just like, hey, we're excited. This is your opportunity to be a head player performance coach. But in this realm of, we need to take care of the players, and this is how we're doing that. So it's a little bit unique in that sense. I like it because it allows for cool opportunities, man. Like, can you see something work on a wide scale, and like, as opposed to just being in one team? And you know, the reason why I accepted this position is for that reason of being with the entire league. It's one thing when you're working at, you know, the WWE, where you're working in developmental, or with the Houston Texans, you can make changes for that team and feel really good about that. Like, man, you know what? You know, over my tenure here, I can hang my hat on, man, I did some good things with this organization, singular. A lot of players in that organization, but one singular organization. And the fact that it was like an opportunity to try to have that feeling for an entire league is special. It's not out there. It's not something that's commonplace. So it was very unique and challenging. It's not easy, but that's the reason why I ultimately drew me to this, because it's like, man, wouldn't it be cool if, man, we can really make some changes and impact throughout the whole entire league, not just the team. And I feel like that's where we're different. So, you know, my vertical is player performance. There's, you know, right now as we are speaking, and, you know, for the next foreseeable future, we have four facilities in the Arlington, Texas area, North Texas area. Each facility is shared by two teams. right? Mm-hmm. So we'll have a staff, a player performance staff that's at that facility. It could be a local high school. It could be, you know, we have a facility that's Choctaw Stadium where the Rangers used to play. So we have these four facilities, two teams share that facility. So one will practice at this time slot in the morning. The other one will come at this time slot in the afternoon. And our player performance staffs are like in charge of that facility. So it's unique in that role. We feel like that gives us the best chance to kind of keep this thing rolling as opposed to like bankroll us right off the get-go. It's like, okay, maybe this can get us going up and moving. Okay, now we got the wheels going. All right, now the league has grown. Maybe we do have our own facilities and our own cities in the future. But as of now, that's how we're rocking right now is we have these facilities in Texas. All the teams train there, and then they hop on their plane, and they'll play at their market cities on game days, travel back, and then continue practice and prep.
Yeah, that made more sense to me. You know, just from like a centralized location, and those teams will actually play in the cities they represent. That actually makes a ton more sense.
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market.
We've built our online training business by partnering with Train Heroic and helping us deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training.
And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best tech and training, go to trainheroic.co/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Which is very unique because we saw last year when they play in these market cities, these fans go nuts. Yeah. So they each team kind of starts to develop its own identity, right? So like when I, you know, you know more like the Eagles, right? What better fan base than the Philadelphia freaking Eagles, right? They all have their own identity. It's a character in itself. And we're starting to build that with our cities in the XFL. It's very important to the league and to the players that they want to go and play for their city. So we not might be there 24/7, Monday through Friday, but man, being out there, getting on that plane and playing hard for their city, that's really important to that league. And it helps give us our league that special, unique identity and to start to like really gel with our cities. And that way our cities have our fan bases can really start to become, you know, their own. We saw in DC, you know, we had a freaking beer snake in the DC field where every week it was its own character, was the fan base. And they would drink their beer and then stack the cup and they would stack, and they'd call it the beer snake. So now this thing has taken on a life of its own. And then each city has their own type of unique thing with that. So that's really unique with us in our, in you're talking about for spring leagues. And then it's really important for us because, you know, it really matters that way these cities can buy in and sink their teeth into the teams.
So when do you guys expect to go to training camp, and then when would the first game be?
So we're expected to have training camp sometime around early January, you know, mid-January, somewhere around there. And then we would say about a month of training camp or so, and then we play our game. So you would say, let's say mid-January, month from there, mid-February is first game. I think tickets just went on sale for the season, which was you know, we're really happy about that, really excited about that. I want to say somewhere around that mid-February area is week one, 10-week season, and then we have playoffs. So that's how that'll go. We'll probably end right around mid-May far as the championship game and things like that.
Well, what's a little more unique is because it's a centralized ownership, you're no longer going to like have haves and have-nots. As you know, in the NFL, you can go to a new team and the facilities, the travel, even down to like the equipment is night and day different. I mean, it's kind of changed now. Everybody's kind of upped their game. But for a long time, there were like these top echelon teams where, sure, you know, they're not chartering planes. They have their own plane. I mean, like, you know, five-star chefs. I mean, they've really gotten pretty nice with it. But, you know, I would hear horror stories, you know, guys that would go play for Cincinnati. I mean, they've since upgraded since they got to a Super Bowl. But I mean, some of those places like Cleveland, they were just terrible. And then, yeah, you know, and then you have places like, you know, the Eagles were terrible, then they became really nice. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys. So it's pretty interesting that teams have, and the owners, I think, used to look at it a little bit different. Like, they were trying to make a dollar. Now, all of a sudden, all the owners are like multi-billionaires, and now they're playing their own game of fantasy football, and it's more ego for them to be able to get a Super Bowl title than to make a few bucks. I mean, they're already rich. So I think it's definitely changed. Right. How involved is Dwayne Johnson in all this? I mean, I know I saw him come out and he does the whole deal. I mean, is it something where, he might come to the facility, I don't know, once a week or meet the players? I mean, how involved is he as an owner?
Yeah, obviously he's one of the most busiest, probably if not the busiest guy on the planet. But I tell you what, this is a passion project for him, and as well as Danny Garcia. They're all in, and he'll take time out of his busy schedule, like this past weekend, or sorry, couple weekends ago for the XFL Combine, and he'll show up and he'll be there, and he wants to shake the hands of the players, and he wants to be in the mix, and he's always, not that he's always looking at the weight room. That's his thing, right? Like, yeah. How's the weight room? And we better, man, I tell you what, if my job is the weight room, I better make sure our weight rooms are up to par, because our freaking ownership is, they know a thing or two about that. So yeah, very involved, obviously busy schedule, but man, he was at, last year, last season, I'll just give you an example how involved we had four games. So we had two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. They went to all four games. They would go to one game at one facility, halftime, hop on a plane, go to the next game, watch that game, boom, next day. They'd make both games for the next day. So very involved at these games. They I know that Danny Garcia or Dwayne Johnson or them both were at a game each week. So it's very important to them that they're on the ground roots. I wrote in my notes, and I always have my notepad with me. One of the things that I wrote down, we had a week about maybe last week's meeting, we just had this combine and everyone was talking about how great it went. And we, it was very big for the league. We had some momentum. We were able to do some cool stuff. But the thing I wrote down in my notes was Danny Garcia was there every single day. Every single day, she went to the weight room. She saw us do testing in there. She was on the field. She was in media with coaches talking to the all eight head coaches. I wrote down how impressive that was for a leader. So like for me, when I lead my team, that's how I want to be. I want to be on the ground floor. I don't want to be sitting in the back at the desk. I wrote that down. I thought that's impressive. Who better to work for and try to, do a good job for than a person that's leading from the front and there, and it matters to them. And so very involved owners, ownership at the games, at the facilities, popping in, shaking hands, making sure that here's the thing. The players in the XFL matter to our owners. Sure. And when you just simplify it like that and just the cut through all the crap, it's like they matter to our owners. And how would you treat somebody that matters to you? Like you would treat them like they matter to you, and that's how our players are treated. And it's great to see. And like I said, I even wrote that in my notes, like, that's how I want to lead. I want to lead like that. I want to be there and I want to be in the mix and on the front lines.
I have a funny story about Dwayne Johnson. When I played at the Eagles, Tom Canavy, he's probably listening to this podcast, the Colonel. He was one of the assistants at Miami and knew The Rock. So whenever he would come in and they would wrestle in Philly, he would always stop in our little closet of a weight room in the vet. And I got a chance to lift weights with him on a few different occasions. And he'd always hook us up with front row tickets. So I got a chance to go and meet him, and always super nice, and was, awesome to come lift weights with him. And then, but it was funny. I mean, he was in decent shape. But I'd never remember thinking like, man, this guy, and now I see him now and he looks like fucking Superman. So I'm like, shit, dude.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing where, you get into Hollywood and it's like, dude, like, this is how you're making your meal ticket. And just the fact that he doesn't have to travel, like, just talking to those guys about their wrestling schedule. Mark Calloway, the Undertaker, lives around the corner from us, and like 300 days a year wrestling. Like, I have zero idea how those guys are able to stay in shape or even get out there. I mean, that's insane for me.
It's something that does it doesn't get talked about enough. You know, one of the reasons why I took the WWE job was I was a personal, you know, goal of mine was to try to make sure that the world knew that these guys were pro athletes and elite athletes. And hey, they put through their bodies through hell. And I wanted to make that aware, say, this is how we train. And it's slowly getting there. You know, people are starting to realize that they are top athletes with the acrobatic moves and the schedule. I mean, unreal. Like I could, people would ask me all the time when I worked with WWE, how does it compare to the NFL? And I would say it like this. I would say NFL on Sunday, it's like, boom, big car wreck, right? You come out the next day, you're banged up, you're bruised up. But WWE is just like little hits all year long. And it's just like, it doesn't allow you for that 6-7 day period for you to get back to good again and then play. I mean, it's just like boom, boom, boom. You know, some of these guys right now and these athletes now, they're doing Raw on Monday. They'll come down to Orlando. They'll do NXT on Tuesday, and then they'll show up on Friday Night SmackDown, and then maybe there's a premium live event on Saturday. It's on.
I hate traveling.
Get brought up enough. You got to be so dialed in with your prep and your recovery. And that's just I tried to help the athletes as best I could, but you know, you're up against it, man. No doubt, you know, and you just do your best. You just keep preaching mobility work, recovery, diet. You just keep preaching that. And hopefully, you know, they start to realize how important it is. I think they do. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be able to do what they do now, you know?
What, you know, you keep, or you mentioned having some strategies in terms of being able to manage these guys so that they can go out and compete. And even though, I mean, I hate to say wrestling is, it's not fake, it's scripted, you know, but there's nothing fake about what happens. I mean, how those guys move in the ring and the hits and all that.
Say,
I mean,
you can't say the F word there, John. You can't say the F word.
No, I do. Believe me, I didn't say it at all. It's no, but I mean, it's true. People are like, oh, I'm like, dude, it's not fake. It might be scripted, but there's nothing fake. I mean, it's not like they're faking the moves. I mean, those guys are really taking the hits. It's just kind of more, I guess it's scripted is the way I like to put it. But how do you manage those guys to keep them in shape? I mean, for, you know, if you think about in the NFL, I mean, obviously, Sundays are like car wrecks, but I always have believed that I think a lot of NFL players tend to get injured because they don't keep a high level of physical conditioning. And, you know, when the conditioning falls off and they get into the season and you get into this kind of game shape, I don't know, people don't continue to lift weights and train like they used to, or that they would in, you know, coming in an off season. And, you know, one of the reasons that I think I was able to play at a high level was I always kept my conditioning up and always banged heavy weights. And I think hopefully that's changing a little bit, but I always felt that the reason that the WWE guys were able to survive it is those guys still train their ass off. Because at the end of the day, you got to get out there, shirt off, you know, set of Speedo and some knee-high boots, which I recently hung out with Boss Rutan. And when he fought a King of Pancreas, you know, Speedo, you know, the boots and the deals they would wear. And he was always joking. He's like, yeah, I do a lot of abs and stuff because I knew I was going to have to get up and, you know, compete in basically a Speedo in front of people. So I wanted to be in good shape. So I always wonder if like the thought of having to take your shirt off is a big motivating factor for dudes to stay in shape, where in the NFL, I get to stack on all this armor.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. It made my job easier when I was there with WWE because the intrinsic motivation is there, right? Like they want to look their best on camera. So that motivation was already there. It wasn't like, hey, we gotta need you in here to work out. It was very much like, okay, we got them. I got them hooked because they want it. How do I make sure they're doing the stuff that they need to do and not overdo it, right? So you talk about what are some of the things that we can give them tool-wise. You know, I always tried to preach, okay, no matter what, we're going to take care of our warm-up. Like, that's going to be a really staple of ours. And if we really nail down a proper warm-up and have pillars built into that, then these warm-up protocols are almost like mini recovery sessions, right? Whether that's take the time to foam roll, take the time to lacrosse ball, take those times to do your mobility work, take the activation exercises, and then like, okay, now we can, you want to lift heavy weights? Okay, great. Now we can do that. Or if you want to lift weights with higher reps, that's fine too. So really trying to like instill, you know, protocols and really just habits so that men, when they come into the weight room, they're almost chipping away at it and they're microdosing that stuff throughout the week. And then instilling things like recovery days, right? Nobody knew what a recovery day was in the WWE before I got there. I don't want to sound like I don't want to take the wrong way like I did that, but like honestly no one really knew what a recovery day was. Everybody was just, you know, chest.
So you invented recovery?
No. I meant like in the WB it was like chest, back, you know, legs, shoulder, arm, you know it was very like a that bro split. And you know, for when we came in, it was like middle of the week, you know, we want to make sure we have this, or towards the end of the week, we want to make sure we dedicate a day for that. So that now when the hope was this, John, the hope was when they go from NXT to Raw or SmackDown, we give them the tools. Like, okay, we've prepared you for the road. It's going to be harder because you don't have a place to go to and a coach to, like, you know, it's like, you know, the strength conditioning coach to give you that, you know, but you have the tools now. Now you know how to take care of your body so that when you're on the road, make sure you do the proper warm-ups, make sure you do the recovery days, make sure another example was something that we used to say, how do we make light weights heavier, so that way you don't always have to move heavy weights. So like, how do you take a pair of 50s and make that into a hard workout at a hotel gym? You know, you talk about tempo work and 1.5 reps or slowing it down or things like that. How do we make lighter weights heavy? So all these types of things we would try to like instill and coach and teach up so that when they graduated from NXT, they had these tools. And obviously I always tried to make myself available for them, but yeah, you're right. That was some of the things that we tried to do to instill them, like, hey, guess what? You can't go balls to the wall now anymore. You got to start training. Like this is your job now. You got to be prepared for that 300 days on the road. This is how some of the things you got to do. Right. And that, you know, I'd like to think that we tried to make, we definitely made some good steps in the right direction in terms of accomplishing that. And I'm proud of that and just made me better as a coach, because if I can train those guys and those girls, then man, I can train anybody, because they get put through the ringer and it just makes you better as a coach, because, you know, you can work around injuries, you can work around scheduling, all these things. It's like nothing phases you anymore after, you know, 6-7 years in the WWE.
I can imagine. With the format, I mean, obviously all the players are living in that kind of North Dallas area and they have 4 training facilities and they're coming in. Like, what's the player responsibility? I mean, I'm assuming that these guys aren't making huge amounts of money, so they might still have jobs that they're working. So are they working and playing football at night and trying to balance that whole deal, or are guys just wholesale playing football?
So when it's football and football only, and for them when they're locked in and when they're here in Arlington. So, you know, the XFL wanted to give these players a good salary and a good way of living, where it's like, you know what, they might not be millionaires, but guess what? They're able to take a deep breath and have what they need as far as like meals and things like that. It's very much like the NFL, where it's like we're providing meals to that. It might not be as to the extent to the NFL, and you know how it is in the NFL, where it's like a meal is stuck in your face every 10 minutes. But we try to provide the very best for these guys, whether that's, you know, protein, whether that's, you know, vitamins, you know, hydration, things like that, you know, all these things that we try to make it a great experience, so that it isn't, you know, fend for yourself. It is something that they want to be, because if we did that, if we were just like, you know what, fend for yourself, then the players wouldn't show up, right? Like, yeah, eventually there's other leagues out there that they could go to, and that, you know, we got to take care of them so that they understand, man, I want to play for the XFL. I want to be a part of this. And when I said earlier, player first, that's the type of stuff we're talking about. What do the players need? They need to get paid. They need to have good food. They need to have their living situation taken care of, or at least helped out with. They need to have these things in order so they can go out there and play. And then once they're out there, what do they need? Well, they need the right equipment, right? Let's get them top of the line strength and conditioning equipment. Let's make sure they have, you know, the great uniforms and clothes and things like that. And so like player first, that's what that means. And I think that in our league, it, you know, albeit it might be 5-6 months, but guess what? A lot of these guys are on contract still, you know, for in the offseason. So, you know, they might work other jobs, but it's like, hey, the XFL is showing them that they're all in with them and they want them to be a part of the league and this league to grow. And that's where it's like, it feels good as an employee because there's no shortcuts taken, right? It's still a startup business and there's things that need to be, you know, tweaked. And, you know, as employees, you all got to understand that, hey, this is a startup, but in the same sense, there's no real like shortcutting from ownership. It's like, hey, we're all in, we want this to be, and we got to take care of the players. And this is what that looks like. So I'm really, it feels good as an employee to like be a part of a league like that, where it's like, hey, we're not, you know what, it's a pretty good league taking care of these guys, you know, and it can only get better. It can always get better and improve, and it will, but man, a great start. I mean, we had, just to give you an example, like we had partners with Design for Sports Supplements that were giving these guys, you know, multivitamin packs every day. We had aminos given to these guys every day. We had collagen given them every day. We had partnership with Pedialyte. So like they had abundance of Pedialyte and protein bars and protein shakes at their, you know, at the ready every day. We had, you know, the mental fitness app with our headsets, Relay, I was talking to you about on the Oculus. Like we had 4 for each facility there. I mean, we have great tools in place for these players. And we feel like, man, one of our most proud sponsors and partners is Arsenal Strength and Conditioning, Arsenal Strength. They have some of the best equipment in the market, and they provided us with 3 weight rooms in the XFL. Oh, it's like these guys are coming in with top of the line equipment. It's like, man, this ain't no rinky dink league. They're taking care of us. So we're proud of that, and we got to continue to make strides with that, because guess what? If we don't take care of them, they'll take their ball and they'll go somewhere else. Sure. So we want to make sure that that's important to us, and we accomplish that.
So I mean, last year was really your first. I was looking it up. I was kind of blown away that the XFL started in 2001. I didn't even realize it was that long ago. Now I feel old. But it was originally started XFL, and the story is pretty epic. It's Vince McMahon, you know, the NFL kind of locked him out. He couldn't buy a team. He said, you know, typical Vince McMahon, you don't want me, I'm going to do my own shit. And, you know, I mean, the guy is, you know, growing the WWE, and, you know, his partnering with the UFC is, you know, now created probably the largest conglomerate on the planet for entertainment. So it's pretty interesting. I was kind of, when I saw that whole merger go down, I was curious to think, I'm like, man, I wonder if he comes back into the XFL with The Rock as his partner and uses a little bit of that cachet and cash and really just horsepower into the XFL. Because at the end of the day, you know, the NFL is so entrenched, they're so entrenched that, you know, they're able to pretty much do whatever they want. And until there's an alternate league that pulls away top players, you know, for whatever reason, like they're never going to really push the envelope.
Yeah. You know, the history of this, of the XFL is wild. You know, I remember I was cleaning my house the other, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I opened up a case that I was in deep in my closet, and there was three tickets to the Orlando Rage game back in 2001. And I'm like, man, like, that's pretty cool. Like now, you know, I remember going to that game and being excited as a fan and, you know, having that whole, you know, buzz around the XFL. Cause I grew up a big WWE fan. So like, it was like WWE meets football. Those are like my two biggest passions and, you know, in life. And so very cool. And look, things didn't work out. And then he made a resurgence 2020. Yeah. And guess what? The pandemic happened and put a stop to it. And, you know, things just, you know, and then here comes, you know, Danny Garcia and Dwayne Johnson. And they're like, man, I want to do this. And it strictly came out of passion. And that's what's cool about it is they're not necessarily saying we don't want anything to do with that. You know, our previous, I think if anybody, Danny Garcia and Dwayne Johnson, I don't want to speak for them, but I feel like they love WWE. You know what I mean? They would tell you that themselves. So it's like they respect that, but they have their own passion, and they have their own plans of where to drive this league. And that's what's cool about it. It's, yeah, we have history, but guess what? We're going somewhere new. We're going to take this thing into a next frontier. And you know, we want to respect the history and everything like that, respect where we came from. But man, we're going to newer and better heights. And that's what's cool about it. And you know, you could think about all the scenarios and get lost in it, but really at the end of the day, you just got to focus on like how can we make season two better? And that's what our plan is. Okay, we had a good season one. How do we improve on that? And if let's just get tunnel vision and, you know, from break it down to step by step, like what are we going to do to make season two a better experience for the players, a better experience for us as employees, a better experience for the fans? How do we continue to drive? And then, you know, whatever happens outside of that will happen, but let's focus in on just like we were as players. You know, what do I got to do to get better today? Right. I got to get to bed early. I got to get to, you know, I got to eat good when I wake up. I got to hydrate myself. And that's what we do is, you know, now that, well, I'm not an athlete. That's how I try to approach the job and try to lead our team. Like, hey, what do we got to do? Okay, we got a job. Let's do it. And then the rest of it will always kind of work itself out. But, you know, that's what we try to do and just be just like we were as athletes.
So what's going to happen or what exciting things are in store for in 2024? Rule changes, new uniforms, different format. Like how, you know, obviously you guys, you know, got in and got the feet wet this year, but I mean, then you know, I saw there was a press release with Danny that, you know, 2024 is going to be even bigger, and we're really going to set this thing on fire. So what's awaiting us as future, you know, potential XFL fans?
Well, I think the big thing is that when we got into season one, nobody knew what to expect. So we were kind of figuring this out as we went, right? And what we saw was, man, this is a pretty cool league. We got something here. We have proof of concept was number one. Like, we did not have proof of concept. I'm sitting here talking to you, John, and I'm saying, hey, I want you to be a part of the XFL. You would have been like, what do you got? And we didn't have that capability to show you what we have. Well, what do we have now going into season two? We have proof of concept. We have stats that say that we can go to our partners at ESPN and say, look, this is, we've proven this. These are our points per game. These are our, you know, these are how close our games were. There's, you know, each game was exciting, and here's our rule changes. And then we can take that proof of concept, and now we can get other sponsors and other partners to buy in. And then bam, what happens is we don't have to change a bunch of what we did, right? What we did is good. What we need and what we're excited about is that now other people are going to want to join the party and help us out because, man, they were able to see what we were able to do as a league and the quality of play by these players and these coaches were able to freaking put on the field. Now it's like, now they have proof of concept. So I think that's what everyone's excited about. It's not like, hey, we're going to do this one thing for, you know, season two that's going to shock the world. It's, you know what? We got proof of concept. And now people are going to be like, man, I want to be a part of that because guess what? It's player first. Guess what? It's, you know, it's passion. Guess what? You know, it's opportunity. I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that excitement. So that's what, you know, I think is cool about season two is that we now have this concept that we can show to partners, sponsors, people out there that want to get on board. And I feel like that's what's really going to help, you know, start to grow this league a little bit.
Dude, I think it's incredible. And I mean, what are going to be some, I mean, shit, dude, what's hilarious about it is I saw that the league started last year and I think we watched one game and I got into it a little bit late. But as I've been going through, just trying to figure out like what are the rule changes? I mean, I know that there was like, you know, one of the big points of contention, it always feels like when the NFL is always kickoff. The amount of injuries that are in the kickoff is you know, to the point where actually I was looking, I saw on ESPN the other day that they're trying to get rid of the kickoff. But it's been so integral into the, you know, within the culture of NFL football that now they look to the XFL and how they did it and wanted to do some of those rule changes. So, I mean, it's pretty cool that the tail's now wagging the dog. But, like, what kind of things are in store? And I'm kind of excited, you know, as somebody who played football, I can't say I was necessarily a big football fan growing up, But I did watch a lot of WWE or WWF wrestling when I was a kid. And so that was kind of the era in which I remember.
I mean, man, some of our rule changes, they're really cool. You know, they're really unique. I think they're good for the players and it's good for the fans. So for the player on the player side, you talk about health and safety being paramount and that kickoff. You're right. That kickoff is it scares, you know, the NFL. It's kind of scary, right? Had, you know, fast collisions, people moving at high speeds. You know, what the XFL has done, they shorten that kickoff return line and that kickoff line. So where that there's a short amount of distance away from each other. So there's like 5 yards from them apart. And then once that ball is like caught, then it's like go time for the kickoff team. So now you're cutting down on that collision. So what you will see, you won't see that kickoff line being where the ball's at traditionally, right? They're going to be much closer up, closer to that front line of the return team. And what's great is because now the technique is involved, right? Now you have to get off the block, shed. It's very similar to what you would see in like training camp practice without the live, like let's meet here. So they just basically took that drill and that's how we're starting. So that's unique. And guess what? It allows for kickoffs to happen because if you kick the ball out of the end zone, you're going to get penalized and you're going to get penalized severely. So we want returns in the game. We want action. The XFL is trying to cut down on the dead play. How many, you know, that dead play is when the ball's out of bounds. Okay, here, reset. We're trying to eliminate the dead play. So every time you watch as a fan, it's something's happening. There's not a dead play. There's not a kickoff out of the end zone, you know, or maybe an extra point. It's something happening live. On top of the, you know, speaking of extra point, there are no extra points in the game. If you score, you can go for one at the 2 yard line. You can go for two at the 5 yard line, you go for three at the 10 yard line. So there's always action. And you talk about coming from behind, man, if you can get 9 points, that's going to really help your chance of coming from behind. Yeah. The overtime rule, that's a great, you know, that's a great rule change. And then I think our coolest rule change, right, is the chance to alternate or have a different version of an onside kick. So if I'm, you know, traditionally, our only chance to get the ball back would be an onside kick, and it's hard to do. It's hard to pull off. So what the XFL allows for is the alternative to go for a 4th and 15 play. If you get that 4th and 15 play, the ball keeps going in your favor. So you just keep driving down the field. And man, we saw a bunch of that last year. It makes the game way more exciting. Like I said, you can go for three, helps your chances. You're never really out of the game in the XFL. And you talk about from the fan experience, isn't that something you want to watch? Like, you know, whether you're rooting for your team to win, you still don't want to see a blowout. You want to see that close on the edge of your seat game. How's this thing going to turn out? And the other thing that's really good for the fans is the pace of play. The pace of play is much shorter, right? So you can watch a game and it's got a flow. You can watch a game in 2.5 hours, you know, under three.
Yeah. It says the XFL will operate with a 35 second play clock. And the basically incomplete pass is out of bounds. Everything just keeps running. It's like on a running clock, which, I mean, should speed.
It speeds the game up. And then here comes 2 minutes. And then once you're under 2 minutes in the second half, you go to that regular standard. Okay, the clock will stop. But it speeds the game up. And as a fan, man, you know, like, you know how it is. It's like you're watching that game forever, you know, so it's very more fan friendly. It gives players a chance to never be out of the game. It gives coaches, you know, talk about coaches can challenge anything, you know, from a coaching standpoint, I can challenge any call that's called. That's unique. And the headsets, I can have, you know, in the NFL, I think it's just quarterback and just middle linebacker, or you get to pick what position. In the XFL, you have multiple guys getting that signal in. So it's like, you don't have to huddle and then break. It's okay. Everybody's getting the play. You might have to signal onto the line or something, you know, Ram, Roger, Lion, Leo, whatever, to, you know, set the protection, but it's like, they can get the play in and they can go. Same thing on defense. So just more, you know, and that's what I spoke on earlier is like, where can we drive the future of football? That's the whole point of the XFL. Like, maybe some of these rules might not pan out, but guess what? Maybe some of them will. And if it makes the game of football better, then the XFL did its job, and the XFL is going to hang their hat on that, because guess, you know, that's what they're all about. So how do we make the game of football that we all love? You love, I love, Dwayne Johnson loves, Danny Garcia loves, all these people love this game. How do we make it better? Fans and players and coaches.
So I always bitched about TV timeouts. One time, I think we were playing up in Green Bay. We had like an 18-play drive, and they called 3 TV timeouts during the course of that time. And they were basically trying to slow down the momentum because they wanted the Green Bay Packers to win. And I asked, as I was an NFL rep, I asked, you know, like, what the fuck is the deal with these TV timeouts? Can we figure this out? Like, are they set? And it was explained to me that TV timeouts were put in by design to allow fans and people at home to be able to go get beer. So, you know, TV timeout hits, so then everybody rushes to go take a leak and be able to go get beers, and fucking they can sell more concessions. Same thing, TV timeouts, people can go get more chips and beer, and so that it was all designed to be able to allow the fans or the people to be able to go out and just consume, because if the speed of the game never happened, they wouldn't get out of their seats and they wouldn't buy concessions. At that point, I realized that we were dancing monkeys and we were just there for them to be able to sell their shit, which, you know, but then they also use it very strategically where all of a sudden, and if the NFL was going to fix a game, it wouldn't be through the players. It'd be through the guy up, you know, the guy that's on the, in the ear of the ref who's, you know, calling TV timeouts and adjusting the game or a weird call goes. If the game was going to be fixed, that's how it would happen. And those TV timeouts were just like, you know, you're playing in Green Bay, it's freezing cold, and all of a sudden you get 3 TV timeouts in a course of one drive, and everything goes to shit.
Yeah.
The one rule that I'm, that I really liked.
For me, I was just going to say, you know, if you're the NFL, the NFL has done some tremendous things, right? But like you said, you made a point earlier, it hasn't had the alternative, right? So like they don't know to change things like that until somebody else comes along and does it. So it's not that, you know, it's like, look, it's not their fault. It's just, it's just like, hey, they've never seen the alternative of some of this stuff. And then now it's like, okay, maybe they do like that speed of play, and maybe they do implement that. And it's like, you don't know until something else is out there that happens, you know? So it's a little bit of that, I think, too. It's like, hey, you know, they've done some great things and they've done some amazing things, but it's like, okay, maybe they just need a little bit of push or newer, fresher ideas out there by somebody else that help them drive the game into a better place.
One of the rule changes that I really like for the XFL is the double forward pass, which means that a team can complete a forward pass behind the line of scrimmage, and then the person, as long as they're behind the scrimmage, can do another forward pass. In the NFL, you know, you basically, you know, one forward pass, it's it. But I think it's pretty cool that, you know, you could effectively, quarterback could drop back and throw to a receiver who could then obviously, you know, if he's got a cannon for an arm, throw it across the field, which sounds pretty exciting. And
we saw that play out in the XFL. And I remember when that happened, it just, you know, it was very cool to see. It allows for different plays to be implemented by the offensive staff, and it gives something to defensive coaches, something more to think about. I mean, just, you know, it that's fun, you know. Yeah. You know, players like that, they always like that trick play type stuff. And then it's just something else in your bag of tricks that you can offer. And, you know, that makes the game more fun. And not only for the players and the fans, but for the coaches too.
Yeah. No, I mean, it allows for more creativity. But it's still standard 11-on-11 football. I mean, it's not as if we're getting into like
at the end of the day,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
we got to line up and play, and we got to block, and we got to tackle fundamentals, and that's what's great about it, John, is because these guys have a chance to develop their game. You know, if I'm a coach and I'm watching this guy, and that guy is on the cusp of making training camp, right? Which is about to happen here in the next couple of days, next couple of weeks here at training camp. These guys are going to be right on that edge, right? And what does it come down to? It comes down to, we need to take more receivers because of this, or you just didn't make the number. And that person now is pushed off to the side. They don't have the time to develop in order to prove their case. Sure. And they don't have film. Well, guess what? Now they get cut. Okay, so what? Big deal. Let's go play in the XFL. Let's develop that skill that you might have needed but didn't get a chance to do, because guess what? You needed to cut down your roster. Well, now you have a platform to develop those skills, whether it's pass rush, whether it's ball catching, whether it's, you know, breaking on the ball, using your hands, whatever, or just to simply film on tape so that you can show, man, I am good. I just, you know, and guess what? I'm playing at a high level in a league that's not a rinky dink league, that's pretty dang good with some good ass players. And then that's what's going to help me. And that's what, at the end of the day, That's what it boils down to. Opportunity to showcase what you got, whether you want to make it to the NFL or you just love this damn game and you want to play and you want to, you know, play for as long as you can. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's 11 on 11 football at a high level. And it gives it an opportunity to kind of develop their game. You know, in baseball or basketball, guys develop their game all year round. Yeah. You know, you don't need a game to develop your jump shot. You don't need a game to happen to develop a drive to the hoop and a soft touch. But in football, you kind of do need a game to happen to develop your skills. Well, now these players are left out on the side or on the side of the road because they don't have that chance to develop in a game setting. And it's like now they do have that. And that's what's going to help drive the football world because, man, these guys are developing their skills. They have a place to do that. Whereas in baseball, hey, I can go catch ground balls all day long from my buddy. You know, same thing in basketball. Football, a lot harder to do. And, you know, that's what's cool about the league is that you get a chance to do that now.
Yeah, no, I was fortunate when I went from college, obviously got to go play in the NFL, and I played with guys in college who didn't have the college experience that they were looking for and ended up trying to go out and play some semi-pro stuff. And I remember just thinking, like, not in a million fucking years would I go do that. I mean, especially after, playing in the NFL. But then when you kind of get done, it's kind of like, oh, you're done. Go do something else. And like you said, like, there's really nothing to do as an ex-football player. I mean, there's really nowhere else to go. There's no like, hey, I'm going to go fucking strap it up and go play on the weekends. Even though some guys I know were playing in like a fireman police league. And like, I've seen some pretty wild shit where I'm like, dude, I don't know if that's something that I would do after the fact, having gone and played in the NFL. But I think this is great. I mean, I'm really fascinated to look to, you know, like when they, you know, obviously you guys had your combine, you get into training camp and kind of get the teams. I'm always fascinated to see, you know, what young, good players are, you know, showcasing, and then like what old dudes that the NFL thought were over the hill that still have good mileage come in and be pretty dominant.
Yeah. That's what it's all about is trying to, you know, tell stories with these players and, you know, we saw a good glimpse of that last year. A lot of different stories with some of our players. You know, I'll give an example that we had AJ McCarron, you know, with the St. Louis Battlehawks. He was a guy that, you know, was a top player in our league. You know, could have been the MVP of our league. It could have was he the MVP of our league? I'm not quite sure, but he was one of the better players in the league. You know, here's a guy that had a huge pedigree in Alabama football. Then he gets to the NFL, and you know, look, he was back up for years and great career as far as that. But at the end of the day, and this is his words, he just wanted to play. He wanted to show his son that his daddy could play football, and that league. This league provided that opportunity to him. So like, that's a story. That's a great story to tell. Another example is a slot receiver from Seattle Sea Dragons who got famous because he did YouTube one-on-one series called, you know, destroying videos. And he like kept winning these one-on-one routes and kept winning and nobody could guard him. So the Seattle Sea Dragons gives him an opportunity to run these routes and he tore up the league. He was like the best receiver in the league. And now, you know, gets opportunities at NFL camps and stuff. So like, man, the stories are there. And that at the end of the day, that's what these fans want, is they want to be able to have that story so that they can tune in and watch and root and it's just more to come. And ton, you know, Ben DiNucci was a great story for us last year. Guy that had a little time with the Cowboys, you know, now comes in great, you know, had a lot of swagger and, you know, was a great mic'd up guy at week in, week out, but, you know, played well. And now he got a shot at NFL again. So like he kind of, you know, fell off, resurged his career. So it's everybody from like that, you know, the guy that didn't get a chance to the guy that used to get a chance that kind of fell off and resurged. So a lot of good storytelling in this league. And, that's what it's all about.
What do you think the hardest position is to go out and potentially fill? I mean, obviously the quarterback job, just from the learning standpoint and that opportunity, I think that's a pretty hard job. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of dudes who can run routes. I mean, rush the passer. I just wonder, like, when it comes down to, like, the legitimate kind of skills and that component, I wonder what the hardest position for you guys to develop, or more importantly, like, what's the one player that everybody's away from?
think it's the hardest for them to find is that O-line, I would say O-line first, followed by D-line. I mean, it's hard to find, and they're not out there. If they're good, they're already caught up, they're already grabbed up, And you know that more than anybody. So it's tough to find the guys that are really good at that position with the size and the skill set to do that. You know, that you have to have a unique skill set. You have to be high IQ to play that. A lot of things happening. You got to be able to know protections and mic points and things like that. And so I would say it's hard to fill those spots and find that, and especially good depth at that. There are a lot of good DBs out there, a lot of good receivers out there. I'm not taking away from that, but there's a lot more of that out there to go around, so to speak, than it is your O-line and D-line, I think.
Well, I mean, you can develop those in 7-on-7, like you said. Guys can put up a YouTube deal and run routes, sure, and try to do it and kind of hone your skills. Unfortunately, playing offensive line, the only way you learn that is through live bullets in your pads and going and doing it against high level components, which, where are you going to do it? You're going to ask your buddy to go out and get his pads and be like, yo, let's go do fucking one on one pass pro? Like, it's not going to happen. Right. So that's interesting. Right.
There's a guy that, there's a guy out there with O-line Masterminds. Yeah. His name's Duke Mayweather. Yeah. He does a great job with that stuff. He's one of the, he would probably agree with us. That's the reason why he's got what he has. So it will continue to develop because, it is a need. But you're 100% right. It's just tough, and it's just the size, man. You gotta have the size to put this. And when you grow up, I got two little nephews. One of my nephews is playing tackle football. He's playing center, and we got to say, look, man, centers, look, you're touching the ball every time, but it's not, these guys want to play quarterback. They want to play, receiver and, things like that. It's not most the glorified spot, but that plays into it too. And, when you go throughout Little League, it's like, nobody wants to play line, but yeah, I think it's going to, when you got things like the O-line Mastermind coming up, and it's just only going to get better because there is that void,
Yeah, no, I'm, dude. Yeah, no, Duke just had his big summit I was supposed to go to. Ended up not being able to make it, but in terms of content and what he's pushing out and kind of bringing that spotlight, he's doing a great job. My buddy Kaz is a strength coach at TCU, and
he's one of the best.
Oh yeah, he's one of the best in the game. He shot me. They have a freshman who's like 6'5". What was he? He's 470. 470. He was supposed to report at 445, and he came in at about 470. 6'5", 6'6", 470. And I asked him, I was like, God damn, what's that like? I mean, it's got to be fucking miserable, in Texas. He's like, he's a Texas kid. And he goes, the scary thing is he's a pretty good athlete. And he's like, I'm telling you, if somebody had told me on paper what was going to happen,
that's going to be scary.
I was like, fuck, dude. Like, he sent the picture. I'm like, there's no way to stand out in that Texas heat. And he's like, he's a Texas kid. He's used to it. So. When I came, I remember there was a dude and he's a freshman and he's that big. I'm like, wow. Dude, the biggest I ever was 326 pounds and it was awful.
You'll be making holes for them. Oh,
I unbelievable. I mean, if he can, has a decent level of conditioning to be able to go and do it. I mean, that's absolutely insane that the kid's almost 500 pounds. He's 30 pounds away from 500, which effectively, if you were 500 pounds, they were cutting you out of your house, Gilbert Grape style. But to say that kid's putting on pads and effectively is a pretty good athlete and moved through space at damn near 500 pounds, I'm like, that's a new one for me.
Cass will get him right, get him down, make sure he's right. But you're right. I mean, that's, we saw a lot of that with WWE with these bigger boy, bigger athletes. And it's like, you don't want to, it's part of that, which makes their character, but then you also kind of want to talk about hey, it's healthier to if you kind of watch this and make sure, take care of your joints, care of that. So we always, we always had to play that fine line because it's like, okay, part of that character is the size, but you also want to take care of at the end of the day, you care about the person and their health and longevity. Like, you want to be able to do this for a long time. I don't care what sport you're in. You want to be able to play this game and do what your craft is for a long time, and longevity is key. And that's where you can really, hang your hat on at the end of the day and be like, yeah, man, I did this for a long time. I was able to make a good living for myself. And, But yeah, that's funny. Cows would get him right. There's one guy out there that get him right. It's that guy.
No, I agree with you 100%. Like that was when he shot me that picture. I was like, God damn, that's big. I mean, I can't imagine the stress on the joints. I mean, but to be that big at 18 years old blew my mind. When you worked in the WWE and you were kind of in their development stuff, I mean, how many guys kind of come through that pipeline? I mean, everybody's familiar with, like, you know, The Rock and John Cena and The Undertaker and all these kind of big character guys that you kind of see. But then there's always these, you know, Joe Sanders comes running in, you know, for his first deal, and they kind of test these guys. Like, how many of these guys kind of come through? And I mean, is it similar to the NFL where I think it was about 10 years ago, I was at a NFL deal with Troy Vincent, and he dropped a stat. I think this is in like 2012, 2013, that, you know, over the course of the NFL history, you know, 40, 50,000 guys had played in the NFL. It was just over 1,000 or just under 1,000 had played longer than 4 years. And everybody's like, no. And then he put up the names and everybody's like, oh, yeah. Oh, I know that guy. And then he showed like a bunch of the names of like the dudes that hadn't, and you didn't know any of the names. So I wonder with the WWE, if it's very similar where, you know, you have thousands of guys come through and test, and, you know, there's one John Cena and there's one Dwayne Johnson and one Undertaker. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to listen to Ric Flair on Joe Rogan's podcast. And I've always been a Ric Flair fan. Dude, the monologues and his whole thing. I mean, he just, you know, like the whole persona for Ric Flair was like, but I mean, that's kind of the era of wrestling I remembered when I was a kid, you know, him and this and, you know, the dancing and the whole thing. And just listening to his longevity story and the ability, I mean, these guys went out and got fucking obliterated every night on alcohol, showed up and this and partied. And like, I listened to it and I'm like, dude, I wouldn't have lasted a year. And this guy lasted 50 years.
He's a unicorn, man, when it comes to that. I was fortunate to go to his roast. He had his final match in Nashville, which was the home of SummerSlam last year. And I'm friends with Mike Vrabel, and Mike Vrabel is a big Ric Flair fan. So I was able to go to his roast, which was 2 days before his final match, and just got to hear some great stories from his peers and friends, and just a good experience. You know, also one of my favorites, I think he's a unicorn to still be going. I mean, there's only one Ric Flair. But to your question about, you know, the NXT and the developmental, we would have consistently anywhere from like 80 to 100 guys in developmental. And that was a revolving door, because you would get people to get called up, and then you would get people that got cut, and then you would get new recruits. So like, it was just this constant kind of game. Like, okay, sometimes you had to make cuts, and like, it didn't happen as much as the NFL, because they didn't want it. You have more time. It's not like there's more time to develop. You don't have, you know, 10 years to develop, but there's no rush with this thing. You know, like, there's time. We could take our time. You know, maybe it doesn't click right away. Yeah, wrestling is the sports entertainment thing. It's a lot of psychology that goes. You got to develop your character, and you might be able to get the moves down, but man, to know who your character are, that takes some time and the reps. So it wasn't like this dead set, oh, this person's got to make it at this time. So it was a little bit more lenient as far as like when people got cut. And so really it was like this, but man, we had a recruiting class every couple of months. So it was like new wave of people. We're coming in. And then the thing about it, it was unique. It was, which is very interesting now when you look back, it's very cool to see, because I was part of that, for a small piece of that. But if you look at Raw and SmackDown, you know, outside of Brock Lesnar, who's really not on Raw or SmackDown anymore, he's kind of just on the big events. If you, outside of a Lesnar or a Randy Orton, the pretty much everyone that's on, you know, maybe Cody Rhodes, he was OVW, everyone that's on TV, SmackDown, Raw, came from NXT. Mm. So WWE has done a tremendous job of like taking their talent, developing them the way they want to develop, teach them the tools, and then creating stars with them. Bianca Belair, Montez Ford, Chad Gable, Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Bayley, you know, the list goes on. They all, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, they all came from NXT, which is down there at the Performance Center in Orlando. So you talk about, like, you know, talent and you know, homegrown, like, they have done a tremendous job with that. You know, some people do get cut, right, for whatever reason, because it doesn't click, or, you know, some things happen, they don't, you know, it's tough business, right? Like, yeah. Not everybody is made out for it. So, you know, those things happen, very similar to the NFL. But, you know, if you stick with it and you listen to the coaches and you know, luck is involved too, just like anything else, but timing's got to be right. But yeah, it's very cool to see, like, man, such a high percentage rate of what's out there on TV now is coming from NXT. So for, like, me, when I watch, it's cool for me because I work with everybody, you know, like, I work with them all, and I have a, you know, as strength coaches, you spend a lot of time with these athletes, and you spend more time with them than the regular coaches do, or the, you know, because you see them all the time. You see them Monday through Friday for an hour, and you crack jokes with them, and that's what it's all about. So you develop a special bond with all of them, and now you see them all on TV and they're becoming stars, and you just couldn't be more happier for them. But yeah, just a really cool stat that WWE has, that they take their development talent, they make them stars. They've got a pretty good success rate with that.
Yeah, no, it's impressive. I mean, I know that the, you know, the mastermind of this thing, I mean, they have these characters, they push them out, and I know that how the crowd reacts to them is really what makes them float. I mean, if the crowd reacts to their character and the crowd cheers for them, and, you know, something happens, and I, you know, there's probably countless stories. They put a character out and they're like, yeah, that one didn't work. And they keep tweaking it and keep tweaking it. Mm-hmm. Or they send some characters out that they think are going to bomb. And next thing you know, they're a huge fan favorite. So it's fascinating that, one, that they can write the scripts like soap operas, and then get these, you know, incredible athletes to basically be like, all right, yep, Here's the script. Now I need you to go out and act, you know, let this thing portray, and, you know, you're never sure, is it 50%, 60%, how it all goes down, but then to be able to execute this stuff, and it's, and they're big dudes, and, you know, super fit girls that are just out there doing some insane shit. And I think, like, you know, there's a reason why, I mean, even though, you know, it's scripted, there's no way to fake, you know, the athleticism and what people are doing, and really just the personas. So, I mean, it's, I mean, there's a reason the WWE is as successful that as it is. And I'm fascinated to see a little bit of that, you know, because before social media, as a player, the only outlet that you had was through the media, and which was going to be filtered by what the media wanted to say, or the papers wanted to say, or the sports writer. Sure. And that was all kind of monitored with the team, that if a player said something crazy, and, or, you know, was doing something or trying to, you know, put out the persona a little bit, there was always a check by the organization that if it's not 100% we want, we're just not going to give you access. So, I mean, there was always this piece, and now you have, through social media, you have so much more opportunity for players to build their own brands and let people know who they are. I mean, the only way people knew who I was based upon if I was on Monday Night Football interviews, or through the paper, or just kind of, you know, meeting you in person. Now with social media, you know, these players are creating entire brands. So it'd be neat, from kind of my standpoint, pretty rad if, you know, and I'm sure they do, like, kind of helping develop characters a little bit going into the NFL, or, you know, like I said, into, you know, XFL, you know, not to say that they're going to, you know, come out with personas and test it in the crowd, but I liked that aspect where people got a chance to really see who the players were. And I think the NFL does that by design, because what they want is they want team loyalty, and then they want to just be like, okay, let's just drop a new cog in there. And, you know, Tom Brady's been the quarterback for the Patriots for fucking, you know, centuries. Next thing you know, he leaves and the Patriots just keep rolling. And then, you know what? People buy new jerseys.
Yeah.
And, like, even though they're still a fan of him, they're still loyal Patriots fans. And that's how it's designed. Right. So.
Yeah, I think it, you know, what's cool in my position, because I've been a part of both worlds. And you look, WWE, they do really well. They do production, they do social media, they tell stories really well. And then like the NFL and you know, these football organizations, they do football really well. They coach football well. They have great coaches. They know how to take care of players. Well, guess what the XFL is? Their ownership guess what they know really well? They know really well about that other world out there. Sure. That's called sports entertainment. They know that really well. And guess what? They're taking some of that WWE success or that experience and that knowledge of telling stories and how to utilize social media to its advantage. And they're matching it with like high quality football operations and football play and coaching. And then boom, it mixes. So for me, it's unique. I grew up playing this game since I was 6 years old. I also was a huge WWE fan like yourself. I've been fortunate to work in it. So like, I love the fact that I get to be a part of this league that has that potential of merging these two worlds and becoming its own universe. And very, you know, very similar. The WWE has its own universe. It's like Marvel. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's the WWE universe. XFL, they're trying to create their own universe too. And guess what? They have the people in place, the right people to know how to do that and to build that. And so that's what's unique about it. And, you know, it's exciting to be a part of. It's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, you can already kind of see the wheels turning and the direction it's going. And that's what's exciting about it.
Nice. So what's your aspirations? Like, I mean, I know you're in this head of performance and kind of overseeing all these teams. Like, what's your version of success? And more importantly, like, what do you see? Like in 10 years, this thing is effectively grown to 16 teams. I mean, you're at 8 now, but
I mean,
there's got to be a growth trajectory.
I mean, it would be great to see that the XFL kind of have these, you know, okay, now it's grown to where now there's a team in each city, but now that team is like, you know, full time in that city. That would be kind of cool to see, you know, and then more teams get involved in the league. I mean, the sky's the limit with this thing. I don't really necessarily think like, you know, what success is for me. Success is for me is like, hey, we need to, I think, try to develop what's the best type of training for these players, give them the tools that they need to develop. And what does that look like? Okay, well, that looks like to me, if I'm going into the weight room and I have my strength coach, my performance coach, like how do I develop? And you get that question asked all the time, like, hey, how do I make it to the next level? Well, for years, it was always like, well, you got to do extra. You got to do this. You got to do that. And that's a very generic answer. And it's true, but it's like, it doesn't really give you direction. And I feel like for us in the XFL, we want to be able to give that direction. We want to be able to say, hey, your quick twitch is not where it needs to be. And that's because, you know, you need to work on more plyometric or more fast, you know, more explosive training, or your force application isn't where it needs to be in your alignment. And that's really important for your position. As you see here in these stats, this is where we see guys make it to the NFL, and we can kind of steer that car and give them a little bit better of an answer when you talk about how do I make it to the next level. So if we can do that and we're starting to do things to go in that direction, I feel like, man, that's a win for us. And then everything else will take care of itself. And, you know, it could be the edge that person's looking for that's taken to the next level. It might be recovery. It might be mindset, you know, and maybe we push them in that direction. And hey, your diet could be it. You know, habits could be it. So whatever it is, kind of help really their overall performance and lead them in the right direction with the right answers. I feel like that would be success for us. And that's what we try to do. And then everything else will kind of take care of itself. I've never really been the one to say, oh, this is where I want to be. I just like to, you know, really dive into where we're at now. And I feel like you work hard, you're a good person, you train hard yourself. I don't want to ever, you know, lose that. That's a big anchor of mine, like training, and always continue to train hard, lead by example, and then everything else will kind of take care of itself.
Damn. Well, dude, if people are interested, and you know, I don't know how active you are on social with all this stuff, because I know you're kind of in this like kind of team piece, but if people want to get a hold of you, learn more, maybe some guys are like willing to go out, like, how do people get involved? And more importantly, like, let's say they're ex-players. I don't know, maybe somebody sitting at this table who my wife would laugh. But like, if guys wanted to go out there and do it, like, how do they get into it? Is it agent-based?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, look, we're the League of Opportunity, right? So we want to be able to, you know, not just for the players, but for our coaches as well, right? So we do want to provide opportunities for young strength coaches out there that want to get involved in this and gain the knowledge and experience of get that pro experience. We feel like we were able to do that last year, and we're excited about being able to do that again this coming year. So it's been important to us to do that, because that's a pillar of the league. You know, for myself personally, I'm on Instagram. I'm FLA_Hayes. You know, I post a lot of stuff with social media, with XFL and stuff we're due. I post a lot of workout stuff, you know, because that's pretty much all I do. I live by the beach and I work out. So that's about all you're going to see on there. And I post, you know, some cool stuff that we do in the XFL. Follow XFL, Instagram, Twitter, all those handles. I mean, the league is just, I'm telling you what, coming from the WWE, where they're really good at, you know, storytelling and vignettes and stuff on TV and promo videos. The XFL social media team is like top notch, man. They have great people. They do a great job. It's cool reels. It brings you inside of what they're doing in a fun and entertaining way. So I'd say definitely check us out, man. If you are interested in wanting to get a part of this, and yeah, no problem. Hit me up and on that. Yeah, I'm excited. And if not, just stay tuned, man. We're ready for season two. Watch some of our games. We're on ESPN. We're on FX. We're on ABC. And we have a great partner in Disney and ESPN are great partners with ours. So check us out, you know, starting February. And we're going to be, you know, we usually play our games on Saturdays and Sundays. And, you know, check us out. If you're in the Dallas area, you know, if you're in the Arlington area, come to an Arlington Renegades game. We got, if you're in DC, go check out a Defenders game. You're in Seattle, go to Lumen Field, go check out the Sea Dragons. Like Orlando, come to a Guardians game. You know, hit me up. You know, we'll make it work. We'll figure it out. So you know, come check us out if you want some fun, if you want to see fun, exciting football in person, and you know, can't wait to get going.
Yeah, no, it says that your first game is February 17th. So yeah, they haven't necessarily released who's going to play.
I knew it was mid February.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting, dude. No, it's awesome. Well, dude, I'm a fan.
We got to get you out. Yeah, John, we got to get you out to a game too. So
I'd love to.
You know, to come out, we'll take care of it. We'll get you tickets. You and your fam, you and your people over there at the pod. You know, at the podcast, we'll get you squared away. So wherever, what game you want to go to, man, just let me know. We'll make sure we take care of it.
I'm in.
And we got to get you a workout in the facilities too. So
dude, I'm down for that too.
Yeah, we got to work out together.
Awesome.
I don't know. I don't know if I can hang with you, but we'll work out in the same weight room. How about that? Well, no.
I appreciate it. I'm excited for it. Well, dude, that was awesome. And I'll send it here and say thanks for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.